Evening. As Alan talked about before, we've been working through this series, Path to Growth. I don't know how you've been finding it. I found it very challenging in that we're looking at some of the basic disciplines, maybe, of Christianity. And for if you're like me and you've been a Christian for a few years anyway, these might be things that you maybe thought that you had an idea about or you're sure was what involved. But what I've found through this series, listening through it, is that I've really been challenged about my ideas on some of these things. My ideas about prayer, service, fasting, reading the Bible, some of these topics we've covered. I've been challenged in a way about my understanding of those, and I feel I've had, anyway, a fresh kind of look at those, or been given a fresh look at those, and challenged in the discipline side of it as well about where my discipline's at. So hopefully some of you have found the same as we've worked through this series. So on to worship. It probably sounds a bit strange to stand up here and talk to you about worship. You've all been enthusiastically singing away for the past, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. I've had a good view of that up here, so it's strange to then say, to then talk about that. I guess for most of us, when we hear about the word worship, or what comes to mind is singing, probably. I know it is for me. We might think about our time of worship that we have, where we're ably led by the worship group, and we as a congregation take part in that. We sometimes talk about it as our corporate time of worship. And that is a powerful thing. That's probably the one time in a week, on a regular basis anyway, where we corporately join together and worship in that way. But as Alan alluded to, I think there's a bit more to worship. Sometimes we have services here where we do different things. We might have spoken words, people come up and share things, prayer as well, poetry, art, drawing, and many other things. Can you just pass me the... just done by you. I don't know if anyone recognises this. I'll get it the right way around, that'd be a good start. Anyone recognise this piece of art? It's not quite the same as one somewhere in the church, but the style is the same. Does anyone recognise it? Anyone know where we can see it elsewhere in the church? Out in the creche, exactly, yeah. If you were to go out, or maybe not on a Sunday morning, my kids tend to play in the creche afterwards, I wouldn't recommend going to contemplate the pictures at that time, but some other time in the week. A guy called Joseph Hayward, many of you might know, who regularly attended, I think particularly the evening service as well, until him and his family moved out to Japan. He did this fantastic artwork. I guess this is a commissioned copy that he gave us as well. But it's hard not to look at this and think, see worship of God in there. See worship of God's creation, the quoting of the verse there, the beauty of the art. Whatever your feelings might be about art, I'm not artistic myself, but I think I can look at something like this and see that the effort and things that have gone into that. So that's what I mean about broadening our worship or thinking about different ways we can worship. As we see on the slide up here, I found a really helpful way of thinking about it when I was looking through, preparing for this. This comes from a quote in one of the books, and the quote says this, whether you're a diagram or a words person, hopefully one of these will resonate with you. Singing, praying, praising, all may lead to worship, but worship is more than any of them. And that helped me, I think, understand where we can put worship and what worship means. Yes, these things are important. Yes, these things are part of it. Yes, these things lead us into a time of worship. But worship is more than any of them on their own. But having said that, I think there is actually a real big challenge for us. Because we do sing as part of our service on a regular basis, twice on a Sunday and maybe at other times in worship services, I guess we need to ensure that we're not just singing out of habit. The words we sing mean something to us. I wonder how our lives would be different if we lived out one line from one of the songs we sung tonight. Just to help out on this, I've got some lyrics of some of the songs we have sung this evening for us to think about. I want to see you high and lifted up. Let us come together, let us join as one. Name above all names, worthy of all praise. And the last one we just sang, I stand in awe of you. If we think about those words, there's actually some really challenging stuff in there. What are we really asking when we say we want to see God lifted high? Do we come together and join as one? Are we living our lives like God is worthy of all our praise, like we sang? Or does our praise go elsewhere? And on Monday morning, how are we going to be standing in awe of God? Now, it's not meant as a guilt trip. It'd be very hard to live out every single line of every single song we sang. But I think it is a challenge to think about the words we're singing. Yes, we're singing them as worship to God, but sometimes there's a challenge for us in those words. Sometimes there's something we need to take on. So to give us an idea of this more broader side of worship, if you go on to the next slide, thank you. This is a quote from a man called William Temple. Maybe some of you are familiar with him. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury quite a few years ago, also Archbishop of York. And he said this, to worship is to quicken the conscience by the holiness of God, to feed the mind with the truth of God, to purge the imagination by the beauty of God, to open the heart to the love of God, and devote the will to the purpose of God. What I'd like to do now is look at this quote and how it lines up with the passage in Isaiah. So if you haven't already got it open, can you turn to Isaiah 6, verses 1 to 8, pages 691 in the Pew Bible. So this quote starts with this, with the line, to quicken the conscience by the holiness of God. One thing, maybe it's obvious to everyone, but it probably goes worth saying, is that our worship should be about God. He should be the focus of it. We worship to him, we worship for him. We have to guard against it being about ourselves and how it makes us feel. But what I think the line is getting at, the first part about the our conscience and the holiness of God, is that this idea of our conscience being pricked or moved, and how we can more clearly see where we are sinful. By focusing on God's holiness, we realise how far away from him we are. But again, it's not about a guilt trip. The main point, as I see it, is to see God's holiness above all else. There may be times when through our worship, God wants to put something on us and help us see some part of our sinfulness. And where can we see this really clearly in Isaiah? If you take a look at verse 3, we've heard it a couple of times tonight, the seraphs or seraphim, depending on which translation you have, they say, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. Actually, Sana, I think, said this when we were praying earlier on, that sometimes it's actually hard to put God's holiness or power into words. And actually, sometimes I think it's good to do what the seraphs do here, is just say the words, God, you're holy, holy, holy. They're crying out. They're expressing it. And maybe their conscience is being quickened by it. So on to the next part. The phrase picked out here, to feed the mind with the truth of God. Yes, God is holy. Yes, we need to realise that. But I find sometimes that can be a bit of an abstract thing. It's hard to work out, like we say, even if it's hard sometimes to put it into real words other than say, God, you're holy. So I think it's really good to have an understanding of the truth of God. Or another way of putting it is to make sure that we understand how truthful God's promises are. By thinking about these things, these truths of God, our minds can be fed, enriched, expanded with good things. And we can also help keep things a bit in perspective. If we take the second half of Isaiah 6:3, which says the whole earth is full of His, God's glory, if we think about that, that means God is everywhere, and not just that, His glory is everywhere. That's a credibly comforting idea, to think that God's glory, His presence, goes with us into difficult situations. Sometimes it's hard to see how God's glory is in and is present in those situations. But the whole earth, as it says here, is covered in God's glory. But I think an even more significant truth of God in these verses, if you take a look at verse 7, it says the following. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Now there's some sort of, maybe some classroom as Old Testament things going on here with the coal and being touched on the lips and that side of things as Isaiah experienced it. But the fundamental part of that is linked to the fact that Jesus died on the cross and our sin is atoned for. We're saved from sin by the grace of God. That's the truth of God. So the holiness of God, the truth of God. Next part, onto the beauty of God. We express God's character, is another way of thinking about it. And as it says here in the quote, to purge the imagination by the beauty of God. This isn't beauty in a human sense, like in a skin-deep beauty we might find in magazines. It's not about good looks, anything like that. God's beauty is way more significant than that. But by focusing on what we see as the beauty of God, it has the effect of removing other less clean things from our imagination. Like the thing I heard up before, take some time to focus on that and you think about creation differently. Take some time to focus on the beauty of what we can see around us in our world and realise that God put that there so we could enjoy it. Terry talked about something similar the other morning. I don't know if any of you remember. He said something, his words were like this, along the lines of this. It's hard to remove bad thoughts from our minds. It's much more effective to replace them with good thoughts. And again in Isaiah we see an example of this. Right back in verse 1, Isaiah 6 verse 1, it says, second half, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. What an image of God, the train of his robe, seated on a throne, high and almighty. That's the beauty of God. And then what I think this quote is saying about the effect that true worship then has on us is that true worship will then help us to open our heart, open the heart to the love of God. We often talk about this idea of head knowledge and heart knowledge, and I think that's what it's getting at here, that true worship changes in our heart in a significant way. It's quite amazing if you think about it. We can open our heart to God's love, that's what it's saying here. His pure, unending, magnificent love. And then we in turn can have that love for others. It can spill out from us. So that's what worship leads to. A growing love for others. We can sing and think about God's love for us. And we are so changed that we have the same love for others. For the poor, the needy, the lonely. Our neighbours, our colleagues, our families. All those people we need to have love for. And again, there's a really great example in this verse of Isaiah. If you want to turn to the second half of verse 8, it's just over the page in the Pew Bibles. In it the Lord is asking this, second half of verse 8, whom shall I send and who will go for us? In this situation, God wants someone who's so filled with his love for the people that they will go and tell them his message. If you know anything about Isaiah and what happened over the course of his book, this wasn't an easy task. This is a thankless task. The people, as common with all the prophets pretty much in the Old Testament, the people weren't receptive to these messages. It would have needed someone with God's love for these people to carry it through. And finally, what does true worship mean? The purpose of God. Devoting our will to the purpose of God. This is our response to seeing the truth of God, the beauty of God, His holiness. We respond to that. We might change our behaviour. We might start spending our time doing what God's will is, as opposed to just our own. But it also implies, actually, that we know what God's will really is. So we may have to seek that out. Sometimes God's will is aligned with ours. We're thinking on the same page, if you like. Sometimes we're off in different directions. So if we're going to devote our will, devote our lives to God's purpose, we want to be sure we're devoting it to the right thing. And where do we see this in Isaiah? The very last verse, the very last part. Isaiah cries out, "Here I am, send me." Kind of puts his hand up, if you like, volunteers for the job, whatever way you want to think about it. This was the start of Isaiah's calling as a prophet. As we talked about it before, it was a tough, demanding calling. It wasn't an easy ride. He was fighting up against people who didn't want to hear what he was saying, but he persisted with it. He was doing God's will. "Here I am, send me." I think there's a clear challenge here in this definition of worship, or this quote outlining the idea of worship. These different aspects end with this response from us needing to seek and follow the purpose of God, turn our will to the purpose of God, however we want to imagine it. We've got a response to make. Our worship should move us onto something. It shouldn't just be about the words we sing, as significant as those are. It should be something deeper than that. Okay, I want to just turn now to another verse in the Bible that talks about worship. If you want to turn to Hebrews 13, verse 15, page 1212 of the Pew Bibles. Says the following, Hebrews 13, verse 15. "Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess his name." Just read it one more time. "Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess his name." Worship's such a broad topic, and there's a bunch of stuff in here. There's a few bits I just want to pick out. First of all, the start of this verse. We can worship because of and through Jesus. God accepts our worship. That's quite amazing if you think about it. Our worship doesn't even match up, isn't close to matching up what he's given to us. God is, as we talked about, high, almighty, pure and holy, yet he accepts our worship. And that's because of grace, what Jesus did on the cross, as it talks about in this verse. "Through Jesus, let us continually offer." But it is this other part about it, continuous, ongoing action. Another way of reading it maybe is not just on Sundays. It really does, I guess, emphasise the point that the songs we sing on a Sunday are only part of our worship. If they are all our worship, then it's kind of saying we wouldn't be able to worship God the rest of the time. I'm sure Alan and the worship group are really nice people, but if we demanded they followed us around 24/7 so that we could worship God in our homes, in our house, in our workplaces of work, they might tell us politely where to go. I know the work and the practice and things that go into this, the time thinking about the songs, the time preparing the songs, practicing, and that's not a small commitment. And while it's fantastic that we have that opportunity to worship and we are led in worship in that way and we can be challenged and we have those words of songs to help us and all those sorts of things, our worship needs to extend beyond that to the rest of our week. But finally, this verse talks about the tough bit of our worship, a sacrifice of praise. There's the implication that this is going to cost us. I don't think the cost is a standing up and singing in church. Okay? Even the someone with the worst of voices, that's not a cost to have to listen to them praising. Maybe there's the idea that it costs us some of our time, definitely. If we're going to think about, as we have done through all these talks on the disciplines, is that one of the key things that comes across is we have to think about where we're spending our time, how we can spend our time doing more of these things if we think they're important. Actually, I think in some ways, worshipping God costs us of ourselves. We have to be putting God first. It's Him we're worshipping. We have to take the focus off ourselves for that time for it to be meaningful worship. And it's not about the nice feeling we might get from it, although that is valid. But it's about worshipping God. Maybe even the idea of the sacrifice is our dignity. There's a great verse in Psalms where David's dancing around and we actually have a song that comes through it, the line that I'll become even more undignified than this. This idea of being free, undignified, however we might want to see it in our worship. If the thoughts in our worship are, how do I look when I'm doing this? Maybe our focus isn't on God. And that's any type of worship as well, whether we're singing, whether it's... If Joseph had thought, oh, how are people going to see these pictures? I might not do them, they might criticise them, they might not like the style, the colours. He would be holding back in his worship for God and we wouldn't have these great tools to help us. So what should our response be to this idea of worship? How should we look at our worship if we want to grow as Christians? Well, one way, really clearly laid out for us in the passage, is how Isaiah responds. Isaiah 6, verse 8, puts his hand up, like I said, "Here I am, send me." Maybe God's calling us in our time of worship to think about a specific situation where we need to be the ones to be sent to that situation. God asks, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And Isaiah, or maybe we need to prepare to answer, "Here I am, send me." But that's for quite specific times and situations, maybe. But more generally, I think there's something that applies to all of us. Go to the next slide. I think we need to look at and maybe be challenged about how deep, that's the right way, isn't it, and how broad. I feel like I'm doing the actions for on the Sunday school songs. How, that's that, isn't it? Yeah, okay, I won't do that. How deep and how broad our worship should be. Do we worship as deeply as we can? As freely as we can? Are we giving our all in worship? Are we preparing ourselves for worship? Some people I know specifically get to church before the service starts. That's something a little bit foreign to me, I have to admit. But the idea of getting to church so they can have that time to prepare, so that when the service starts, they're ready for that act of worship, whatever that might be throughout the service, as opposed to thinking about, you know, did I leave the oven on at home that we need for dinner, all these sorts of things. Are we preparing ourselves for worship? Are we in the right state of mind to connect with God in our worship? Yes, we're going to have distractions. Yes, there's things going on in our lives, clearly. We have a unique opportunity in our times when we meet together on Sundays to be led in the act of worship, to be led into worship. So deep, is our existing worship as deep as it could be and broader? Is it as broad or as wide? Are we limiting ourselves to what we might consider worship to be? Do we just think, okay, I've sung a few songs on a Sunday morning and that's it? Are we missing out on worshipping God in other parts of our lives? There's all these things in this quote we talked about earlier that can be definitions of worship. We can worship by realising the holiness of God, remembering the truth of God, imagining the beauty of God, opening our hearts to the love of God, and then following the purpose of God. That's quite a broad range of things that fit under those definitions. And so, as we go from here, my prayer is that we'll accept the challenge of the question. We sing it on a Sunday, but do we live it out on a Monday?